Hello, tech fans, and welcome into the latest Tech Sideline podcast, originating from TSL's high-tech studios in the Virginia Tech Corporate Research Center. Whether you're watching or listening, live or archived, we are so glad you could join us today as we record on Wednesday, September 25th, and preview Virginia Tech hosting Duke on Friday night at Lane Stadium. Our crew today, as always, we've got Malcolm, yes, he's related, Stewart, behind the scenes producing. On the podcast set, our managing editor, Chris Coleman, our head honcho and founder, Will Stewart, and I'm your podcast host, Evan Hughes. Thanks so much to everybody for being with us. Again, as we get you ready for Virginia Tech and Duke on Friday evening. A reminder that this week and every week, the TSL podcast is proudly presented by the Fisher Law Firm, Virginia's trusted DUI and traffic defense firm, dedicated to defending individuals charged with traffic-related offenses. From their offices in Blacksburg and Roanoke, the Fisher Law Firm handles cases throughout the Commonwealth of Virginia. To date, the firm has defended more than 30,000 people. That number continues to grow.
1 million people.
charged with moving violations. For free consultation, call anytime, day or evening, toll-free at 1-800-680-7031 or email them at info@fisherlegal.com. We'll get to Quentin Harris. We'll get to the Blue Devils. We'll talk to Sean King. We'll talk Hokies. But first, a couple of announcements. And first, for those that are watching the podcast, they might be wondering why Will is wearing a navy blue polo.
I wouldn't call it navy blue.
That's not navy. Yeah, that's just Duke blue.
That's regular. It's, yeah, why are you wearing a Duke
why blue? Why are you polo? Wearing so, a Duke polo, Will?
So I call this my accidental Duke shirt. I get a lot of stuff at TJ Maxx and Ross. So we're rolling through TJ Maxx one day, probably, you know, last summer. And I see this shirt. If you're watching on the video, it's a pretty cool Under Armour shirt. And I've actually got a maroon version of this shirt. So I see it and I'm like, oh man, I love that shirt. I'll get that shirt and take it home. You know, I buy it and I get it home and I look at it and I'm like, oh, that's Duke blue. So I call it my accidental Duke shirt. So I guess if you see me around, I will wear it from time to time, but I'll definitely wear it on the podcast when we're playing Duke in football or basketball. So that's the story of why I'm wearing what looks like Duke
blue. Is this a preview of your predictions to follow at the end of the podcast? Or are you trying to pull like a Corzo headgear related?
No, we've actually done our preview and the predictions are interesting. And, okay. And it actually reminds me, like when Tech played Duke in Castle last year, I had this old blue winter coat that I figured out after many years I don't really like the coat, but you can remove the lining, and I really like the lining, so I was wearing the lining and I wore it to this Tech Duke game, and at one point I'm looking at myself going, this thing is Duke blue. So I have at least two articles of clothing that are Duke blue.
CC, do you have any accidental other school shirts or polos like that?
No,
a big fan of orange and blue.
Yeah, pretty much all my stuff is maroon, orange, white, gray, or the color of one of my other teams. So no accidents here that I know of.
let's also, if you're watching on Facebook today or watching live or archived, you can see that our cover photo of the podcast is a beautiful new GMC truck owned by one Will Stewart. Congratulations, Will. New car. How do you feel about it?
I feel awesome about the truck. I'm exhausted. It's been 8 days since the Miata got totaled, and it's been a very busy 8 days of trips to doctors and just dealing with trips to lawyers and dealing with a lot of stuff and trying to cram in work at the same time. But yesterday, I went down to Charlotte, and I bought Darth Vader's truck. it's a 2019 GMC Sierra. It's an elevation package. And I, you know, we won't spend a lot of time talking about it, but I wanted some very specific things, and I had to go all the way to Charlotte to get them. So it was really cool. I got it at free plug, Liberty Buick GMC down in Charlotte. They were great to deal with, and it's really different from what I used to drive. So so give me a second here, and I actually want to read some texts that I sent to Malcolm the other day. So segue into something else while I look them up.
You know, I love how you said it's the Darth Vader truck. Maybe you open the door and James Earl Jones' voice kind of welcomes you to the car when you first purchase it. It is a great-looking truck.
Yeah, it's all blacked out with black rims, and it's just super cool. So that was a lot of fun. It's I tell people all the time I like cars. I don't work on them. I don't like them in that way. I just love to buy them and own them and drive them and all that stuff. So you know, we've talked about how the Miata got totaled. So after I made the decision to go big and get a truck this time, so here are the texts I sent to Malcolm. In the last 20 years, I've been driving three cars that have been totaled by larger vehicles. As a sidebar, one of them was my fault. The other two were people just plowing into me. I'm done driving small cars, and the next time someone hits me, I'm going to win. Every day, I see people looking at their phones while they are driving. When one of them finally hits me, I'm going to win. I see deer all over the road at night all the time. When I finally hit one of them, I'm going to win. So this is true. This was the night of the Clemson game, what I'm about to read. The Clemson game in 2017. I was driving back country roads on the way home that night. I ran over a raccoon with the Miata, and it did damage that would have cost over $2,000 to fix. A raccoon. If I run over a raccoon with my new truck, you won't even be able to tell. So that's where I am, and I've warned my wife I'm going to have a bit of an attitude now. And I'll try to keep it inside. And
so we're going to make a shirt for Chris about redshirting players, and we're going to have a shirt for Will saying, I'm going to win.
ABT, quotes. Always be trucking. And on the back, I'm going to win.
For those that are looking at our podcast set, you see in the corner, we've got Stick It In Ale on our set, and we have an update.
Yes, so I have been very busy and haven't had a chance to communicate with the brewery or the distribution company, Blue Ridge Beverage. The brewery is Beltway Brewing Company up in Northern Virginia, and the distribution company is Blue Ridge Beverage in Salem. We did hear Chris communicated with someone who said that there are 400 that Blue Ridge went to Beltway Tuesday, I think, is when they pick up, and that they picked up 400 cases and 15 kegs.
I think they're picking up today.
Today.
Yeah. Which is on Wednesday, September 25th.
Yeah, so as long as this stuff usually gets delivered on Friday. So that's what we heard is 400 cases and 15 kegs. Now, to put that in perspective, the original run for the ODU weekend, that was the first home game, right, was ODU. That was 300 cases, and that sold out quickly. So I haven't got an updated list on where to buy this. I assume it's the 25 places we had listed previously. If you want to know where to get it, just Google where to buy a Stick It In Ale Tech Sideline, and you'll get linked to an article that we ran right before the ODU game. So this is great. You know, as you know, the profits go to support our philanthropic endeavors, which are important to some people you may know at a university you may be familiar with. We were talking about roughly $10 per case. So, gosh, between what they sold at the brewery, that first run that got delivered down here, and this run, you're getting up to about 1,000 cases now. And so that's about $10,000 that are going towards our philanthropic endeavors. And I don't even know what we make off the kegs. You know, right now, we and the brewery and the distribution company are just going at it, and we're going to figure it out after football season. So this is really exciting stuff. And if you're on the fence, I don't know that we're going to continue to offer this beer. You know, we'll probably continue to offer it through this football season, but I don't really know. You know, I don't know if this is a limited edition thing or if it'll carry over into next year. You know, these discussions haven't been had yet. So if you're kind of sitting around, you know, like back in the 70s, Jimmy Carter's brother Billy, you know, we've talked about this. They did a beer, Billy Beer, back then, and it was limited edition. And so if you're on the fence and you're like, I don't know if I can make it to the grocery store this time or not, go get you some, you know, it's for a good cause. And so that's that. You should be able to find it. No problem this weekend.
Awesome. And then last thing, Drive for 25 begins Wednesday, September 25th at noon. And I know Tech Sideline is involved in that again this year.
Yes. So last year they called it Drive for 25 Day. This year they're calling it the Drive for 25 Blitz. And last year it was 25 hours. This year it is 2.5 days. So it starts at noon on Wednesday and runs till midnight Friday. And it is just a, you know, if you've been paying attention and you've been involved in these, you've seen it's a giving day. On the university level, they call it a giving day. And it's just a day to kind of rally people and get them to, you know, donate to the university. And in the case of the Drive for 25, the Hokie Club does it once a year. This is the second one they've done. And they do it to try to get people on board and get the Hokie Club count up to 25,000 members. if I have my numbers correctly, it only takes like $25. So if you're not a Hokie Club member, donate $25, $50, $100. And, you know, just come to the site. We'll have in our Twitter feed, we'll have all this publicized. And so one thing I want to add is that people are always talking about what the Hokie Club should do to raise money and add members. And this year they're doing something to my knowledge, they've never done it before. And it's pretty neat. Friday, which, of course, the Duke game is at 7 o'clock that night. Friday, there will be Hokie Club personnel in every single parking lot walking around with, and you can, of course, use cash or check to join, or they will also be able to take your credit card. And so look for Hokie Club people walking throughout the lot. If you're not a Hokie Club member, grab them and sign up. And you can, of course, call them. 231-6618, I think, is their phone number. If you use that phone number and you get somebody else, say, oh, I'm sorry, and hang up. But I'm pretty sure that's a Hokie Club's phone number. Or hokieclub@vt.edu, I think, is their email address. Bill Lansden and I were the head of the Hokie Club, and I were talking about this the other day, and I said, oh, don't get to those lots too early, you know. Get there a little later after people have been tailgating for a while. And, you know, Bill just smiled. he just smiled and nodded, you know. So, anyway, look for them, and they really want to make this a big deal and add. Bill wants to add 5,000 people. So, look for them and jump on board.
Fantastic. CC, you ready to talk some football?
I am.
Okay, let's do this. Since Will did not update his Twitter bio,
right.
I am going to tease this for the end of the podcast. Today okay. is National One-Hit Wonder Day.
Okay.
So I know I have a lot of one-hit wonders. Of the top five from a Rolling Stones article at the end of the podcast. If you're on Facebook, start naming what you think might be in that top five of the biggest one-hit wonders of all time. So, we'll
Science.
See that at the end of the podcast. That might be in there, actually. So, all right, let's get into some football, CC. Let me first ask this. How important was the bye week for Virginia Tech to get guys healthy like Zach Hoyt and Damon Hazelton?
I mean, I think the time in the bye week was very, very good. It doesn't mean those guys are going to play on Friday, but it does mean they're closer to getting back, I think. And they're 1 week closer to getting back without Virginia Tech playing a game.
Yeah.
Virginia Tech badly needs to get Hazelton back, specifically for this game. I mean, the Duke game last year came down to receivers either making plays or not making plays. I know the score line was 31-14, and on paper it was one of the best games Tech played last year, which of course it was, but when it came, you go back and watch that tape, and Duke receivers twice in the end zone with one-on-one opportunities failed to come up with a catch against Tech defensive backs. Meanwhile, Virginia Tech's receivers made four or five such catches over Duke's defensive backs in one-on-one coverage, and that was the difference in the game. And Virginia Tech's quarterback was Ryan Willis, and Duke's quarterback now starts for the New York Giants.
Yeah.
So if I'm Duke, I know we'll talk about this later, I'm doing everything in my power to take away those one-on-one opportunities this year and make Virginia Tech drive the length of the field with the running game and the short to intermediate passing game.
You know, Coach,
yeah, so plays, let me interrupt and say, plays that in preparing for this game that I was reminded of was, I think we all remember the Dalton Keene, you know, screen pass that he turned into like 70, 80-yard touchdown. I went back and watched that play this morning. He stiff-armed a couple of guys, broke some tackles, great play. Kuma, I think, had
he'd
a tough catch.
He laid some dude out.
Yeah.
On the Dalton Keene run.
Yeah, yeah. Kuma sold out and blocked the last guy who could have tackled Keene. I think Kuma had a nice touchdown catch, if I remember correctly.
I don't remember whether it was a touchdown, but I know he had a big catch in traffic. I know Trey Turner went up over a defensive back and caught a pass.
And then
Phil Patterson called.
Yeah, the play I'd forgotten about was where Phil Patterson went up in the end zone with a Duke defender and knocked the guy's helmet off and made the catch.
We've got a good picture of that. I should probably
I've already put it in the okay. We haven't run the preview yet, but I've put that picture in the preview. It's you can't see Patterson, but you can see the Duke guy with his helmet flying off. So Chris is right. A lot of big plays made by receivers and Dalton Keene.
Yeah, neither team could run the football. So it just came down to receivers making plays, and Tech's did, and Duke's did not.
Which might lead into our preview just a little bit later when we talk about Duke. I want to talk more about guys like Zach Hoyt and Damon Hazelton. Coach Fuente at the press conference basically saying a lot of those guys are day-to-day. What are the chances, in your opinion, that Damon Hazelton plays Friday versus Duke?
I'd just be guessing. I don't. Sure. I know nothing.
My gut feeling is it's just trending downward.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, I don't. There's not any particular reason I say that. You know.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I don't know how a hamstring injury that occurs in early August isn't okay by the end of September.
Fuente is very protective of his players from that standpoint. He doesn't want to put them in a position to be criticized. Even if they're in his doghouse, he won't say so.
Right.
You know, so we don't – there's a lot of rumors circulating around why Damon Hazelton has or hasn't played. You know, honestly, we don't really know.
We don't really know. All I know is he was Virginia Tech's leading receiver last year, and he was a good blocker on the outside. So Virginia Tech is missing him in terms of a large number of catches, and also he'd probably be their best or second best perimeter blocker. And right now they've only got one good perimeter blocker. And that's Philip Patterson.
Yeah. So and Patterson doesn't play as much.
I think he should play because of that. But we need Hazelton back in a big way.
Let's talk more about the bye week. And when you look at this team coming off the 24-17 win over Furman, what were some areas that you're hoping that Virginia Tech improved upon, worked on during the bye week?
I am not going to say the running game.
Hmm.
You know, that dead horse has been kicked and beaten and thrown off the roof David Letterman style and just abused. So, you know, that's old news. I think we talked about this last week or the week before. I hope that the freshman offensive line got a chance to watch themselves on film and really work on just continuing to learn their positions of, you know, one or two of these guys, the positions are new to them, you know. Hudson at center is probably the biggest one. So just get a chance to advance there because Duke as we'll get into, Duke's got an older, experienced defensive line. Mm-hmm. This could be a problem.
Yeah, it's going to be a problem. I don't think Tech's going to be able to run the ball Friday night. Even if they made improvements, you're not going to be able to tell it on Friday night. I mean, Duke held Alabama to 3.5 yards per carry, for goodness sake.
Yeah.
How is Virginia Tech's freshman going to block those group? It's probably not going to happen. Virginia Tech has to win this game by throwing the football. And whether that means Duke gives them opportunities over the top again, or this time Duke wises up and plays two high safeties, and that means Virginia Tech beats them through the short to intermediate passing game, then that part had to improve. So to me, the passing game needs to get more consistent.
So
obviously the running game does. But
one of the points to be made about last year's game is this is a game that was played right after the ODU game. It was the first game Ryan Willis started. Mm-hmm. There wasn't any film on Ryan Willis.
Yeah.
So you talk about Duke playing a lot of man coverage. Now that there's a whole year's worth of film on Ryan Willis, and he's not the best at reading coverages, Duke's defensive game plan could be very different.
It should be. I don't know why anybody would come out and man coverage across the board or cover four or anything like that against Virginia Tech now, because it's proven that Virginia Tech, you know, without Stephen Peoples, isn't going to be able to have a consistent running game, and Ryan Willis isn't the type of the quarterback that's going to pick you apart with the short to intermediate passes. He's just not that type of player. And at this point, he's a third of the way through his redshirt senior season. He's not going to magically become that type of player.
Now, I think one pass he does throw really, really well is that short cross, like he threw to Caleb Smith. Man, he puts that going back and watching old Logan Thomas film, you wish Logan could do that. You know, Ryan Willis puts that thing on the money, nice and soft, very catchable.
Yeah, and that's such a slow-developing play that as Virginia Tech plays better, teams are not going to have time to
run it. I think it's the same play that Trey Turner wound up fumbling on, or a similar play.
That was a screen.
Yeah. Okay.
You're listening to the Tech Sideline Podcast presented by the Fisher Law Firm, getting ready for Virginia Tech and Duke on Friday night at Lane Stadium. Let's talk about Willis. I planned for this. You look at his numbers last year against Duke, and you guys alluded to it. Fantastic. 17 of 27, 332 yards, 3 touchdowns, and no picks. What did Virginia Tech do that day to make him successful? What can they take from that game and try to apply this Friday against Duke?
It depends on how Duke plays them. I think you can take a level of confidence that you beat Duke by 17 on the road last year. But, you know, once the game starts, I mean, Sean King didn't beat Duke last year. Tavion Robinson didn't beat Duke last year.
All those freshman offensive linemen.
The freshman offensive linemen didn't beat Duke last year. Caleb Smith didn't beat Duke
last
year. Now,
Tech does have better, I think, better defensive tackle play this year than they did.
And they shut down Duke's running game last year.
Yeah.
And Duke is not particularly good in the skill position offensively. There are no more Jamison Crowders in that program, which is one of the reasons why people thought Daniel Jones was overrated. In reality, if Daniel Jones has had good receivers, he would have put up monster numbers most likely.
Yeah.
He's putting up better numbers with the Giants than he did in most games at Duke.
Threw for like 330 yards with the Giants.
Exactly. I just don't know how Duke is going to play Tech defensively. It's hard to say what you can take out of last year's game. I mean, especially when a guy who made this a couple of those big plays, Kuma, is now playing for somebody else, and Hazleton, who scored a touchdown in that game, and I think probably had another big catch over man coverage. We don't know if he's going to be playing or not. We know Trey Turner can make those plays, but we don't know that Caleb Smith can make those plays. We know that Phil Patterson can make them, but they don't seem to want to play Phil Patterson more than 20 snaps a game for some reason. So I don't know that we can take a lot out of last year's game, to be honest with you.
Yeah. It felt like one thing last year, Will, and I understand you got a chance to kind of go back and watch. Like, when I think about the Duke game from last year, I felt like Willis threw the back shoulder fade extremely well last year. There might have been a touchdown. That pass to me, you talk about the short crossing route, that is the one pass, though, in Willis's arsenal. He throws that jump ball so well.
And I think that is one of the reasons why Willis starts over Hooker and Patterson is you know, he doesn't have a stronger arm than Quincy. But he's a generally a more reliable, more accurate passer. But one of the things I think he does better than Hendon is he has a stronger arm and throws that fade route really well. And you saw that against Furman, the touchdown pass he had to, I think it was Turner. That was arguably the best game he played. I think if you go look at his passer ratings, he had other games where his passer rating was higher. But I remember, you know, we talk about how the ODU game kind of derailed Tech's program. Not really. Duke was ranked last year. They were ranked, 21st. I believe, 22nd.
Yeah.
I can't remember. One of them, in our write-up, one of them was ranked 22nd, one of them was ranked 24th. Both teams were ranked. Chris and I both picked Duke to win, but Tech went down there and played a really good game and outplayed Duke, and I think that made everybody feel better, particularly after Ryan Willis's performance. Yeah,
and then the next week was Notre Dame, and Tech played well in the first half against Notre Dame.
Yeah.
It's just Notre Dame was a more experienced team that eventually made the playoffs.
That
so
was
really
the
good
beginning
team.
Of five losses in six games, couple of which Georgia
Tech
and Pitt.
It wasn't really until they went down to North Carolina, and I know they won that game, but the defense got gashed.
Yeah,
where you were like, ugh, that wasn't pretty.
Yeah.
They were ranked 22nd, and then, of course, Notre Dame
Tech
was ranked.
Okay.
Or Duke was 22, yep. So,
okay, yeah.
That was Virginia Tech's best win last year, was Duke, correct?
I think it was Virginia. I mean, Duke is one of those teams there. They have to – their talent's so bad offensively, in my opinion, that they have to play a perfect game to have a chance to win. And generally, they play as well as they can. Remember Wake Forest beat them like 59-7 at the end of last
crushed
season?
Oh, yeah, crushed them. That's right.
Yeah, so
– it was in the rain at Duke or something like that, and there were 50 fans in the stands.
The picture of the stands was incredible. Whew. It was absolutely –
it's like there wasn't even a game that day.
Right, yeah, it was ridiculous. So I think Tech's best win was against Virginia.
I want to go back and talk about the running game. We touched on it a little bit, but the conversations we were having on the podcast leading up to Furman, the message boards, the fans, even Coach Fuente and the coaches – Tech's got to run the football better. And Kashawn King, over 100 yards rushing, averaged 9.5 yards per carry. Are you more at peace with the running game than you were 2 weeks ago?
No. I'm more at peace with the future of it.
Yeah.
Because I think King did, and we talked about this, I actually said, probably on the message board or maybe in an article, I said something like, I wasn't really seeing the King hype until some of the plays he made against Furman. So now I look at that and I'm like, okay, you put 15 pounds of muscle on that kid and let him mature a little bit, and he could, you know, depending upon how they use him, he could be a 1,000-yard back. I got to hedge that a little bit because he's not a big guy. This year I just worry about the fact that he's basically fresh out of high school playing against grown men.
He still wears braces. He's still a kid.
Yeah.
And then also discuss the offensive line a little bit. We talked about how Furman, Silas Jansen got pulled, Luke Denuta came in. Is that something we're expecting to see on Duke, Denuta starting over Jansen?
So Virginia Tech actually updated their depth chart in the game notes this week, and that's not one of the changes
Of the changes. Not that I would expect it to be. They finally put Nestor and Hudson as the starters.
Right. And Caleb Smith over Damon Hazelton.
They finally did that. They've still got Grimsley over Robinson in the slot, and that has not been the case.
Right.
They've still got Deshaun McLeese or Keshawn King.
Right.
And defense, they finally put Eli Adams up as the starter instead of Tywan Garbutt. But I've actually heard that there's a decent chance Garbutt could come back this week.
I hope so.
I don't know if they'd start him if he came back or whatever, but I don't necessarily worry about Tech's defensive ends this game, particularly left defensive end spot, because that right tackle for Duke is a true freshman. I wish you'd get Garbutt back, and you can get an advantage there.
Right.
Redshirt sophomore against a true freshman. One of the few times a redshirt sophomore will have an advantage in an experience battle. What were we talking about? The offensive line?
We kind of wandered down a path. That's cool, though.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to expect from a week. I mean, I was shocked when Brian Hudson came in the game at center a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
I had no idea he had been working at centers. He was not listed on the depth chart as a center. He was listed as the third right tackle. So there's no way you can accurately make predictions on. I would move Tyrell Smith to center if it was me, assuming he can snap the football. I don't see how that would make our performances worse. And it could preserve Brian Hudson's red shirt and make us better 4 years from now.
Are you listening, Coach?
Right. but
now again, Zach Hoyt's been injured. He was the guy on the depth chart under Brock Hoffman. If Hoffman was denied eligibility, he would start at center. How much better does the offensive line become if Hoyt is healthy?
I think they're better at picking up stunts and things like that. They get better pass blocking on the interior.
And how much of the protection calls does the center make? I mean, I got to admit, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, probably a decent amount. It's probably an important position as far as communication and things like that. Sort of like Mike linebacker or free safety on defense. I don't think it would. He's not a dominant physical talent. I mean, it's not like big, huge running lanes would just start opening them up in the middle, but I do think Tech would get a little better from a pass protection standpoint, for sure.
Yeah.
Awesome. We're talking on the TSL podcast presented each and every week by the Fisher Law Firm, getting ready for Virginia Tech and Duke. Quickly, defensively, their bye week. I'm sure the defensive line is probably a group that both of you would say probably could enjoy a week to reflect with so much youth.
So in doing research, I didn't do a lot, but I was going through Chris's game preview last night, and I decided to go look up and just look at NCAA stats, not the efficiency stats, the more can't find the term, advanced stats, but just stats that the NCAA puts on their website. Duke doesn't do anything particularly well. They list 25 stats on the NCAA's website, and in 12 of them, Duke is between 50 and 80 in the country out of 130 teams. There are like three stats where they're plus 100. There are only two statistics where they're top 40. They're number 33 and number 40 in these two stats, and they're not major stats. They're kind of minor stats. But one of the things I noticed is that Duke is, let me see if I can remember this correctly off the top of my head, they are number one in the country in tackles for loss allowed per game. They only give up 2.33 tackles for loss per game. So they're not getting tackled behind the line of scrimmage. They are tied for third in the nation in sacks with, I can't remember the statistic, but they're tied for sacks allowed, not sacks from your defense, but sacks allowed. So I looked up the Alabama game, and Alabama only had two TFLs against Duke the entire game. And Duke, I think, has only given up one sack, and Alabama had it. So they're not getting behind the chains. They're not getting stopped behind the line of scrimmage. I didn't go and look at their penalty stats, but they're a David Cutcliffe team. They're probably not committing a lot of penalties. So I start wondering, can Virginia Tech get pressure on their quarterback? We saw against Furman where – Bud did some stuff where he sent Chamari Connor, and he said that gave Connor some confidence to make some plays. Yes, it's a FCS opponent, but you gotta walk before you can run. You talk about Duke having two freshmen offensive tackles, one of whom actually grades out
pretty
well.
The left tackle has been really good so far.
Yeah. So the fact that they're young doesn't mean they're bad. But I just wonder if Bud's cooking some stuff up, maybe some blitz packages off the edge to try to stress those guys and make some plays.
We'll talk about Duke on the other side of this timeout as we step aside and get a word from our friends at the Fisher Law Firm. We'll talk about the Duke Blue Devils, who are 2-1 coming into Blacksburg on Friday. This is the Tech Sideline Podcast presented by the Fisher Law Firm.
If you have received a DUI or other traffic-related offense, the road ahead can seem uncertain. Here at Fisher Law Firm, we have a team that is with you every step of the way. We have the experience that comes along with having defended more than 30,000 criminal and traffic cases statewide and the expertise to get the job done. Call anytime, day or evening, for your free consultation or a complimentary copy of my book. Don't forget to ask us about our free appeal guarantee. To learn how we can help solve your problem, check us out at fisherlegal.com. This is Jonathan Fisher, class of 98. Let's go Hokies.
Our thanks to Jonathan Fisher and his great team at the Fisher Law Firm for being the title sponsor of the Tech Sideline Podcast. We've got Malcolm, yes, he's related, Stewart behind the scenes producing, Will Stewart, Chris Coleman, and I'm Evan Hughes on the podcast.
So actually, terminology, you just called him a title sponsor. They are not a title sponsor, they're a presenting sponsor. Have we ever had this discussion?
We have not.
So the Tostitos Fiesta Bowl?
Yeah.
Tostitos is the title sponsor.
If this was the Fisher.
The Rose Bowl presented by City. City is the presenting sponsor. So the title sponsor, your company name actually goes in the title. If you're the presenting sponsor, it's the regular title presented by.
I apologize.
As a future broadcaster with a really bright future, you need to know the distinction.
I do. No,
I thought that was a really cool thing when I learned the distinction. I was like, oh, I get that.
Our presenting sponsor.
Yes,
each and every
if they were the title sponsor, it'd be called the Fisher Law Firm Tech Sideline Podcast.
Learning something new every day. There right. We go.
I've been at this a while.
No, you have. Yes. Let's dive into Duke, guys. The Blue Devils. We've kind of talked about them already, right. But let's take a little bit of a deeper dive. First of all, they're 2-1 on the year, and I think a common theme is we probably don't know just how good Duke is because of the opponents they play. They open up their year against Alabama, who they held scoreless in the first quarter, down 14-3 at halftime, end up losing 42-3. Yeah. Alabama came alive in the second half. Then they beat North Carolina A&T 45-13, knocked off Middle Tennessee State 41-18. Mm-hmm. So is it fair to say that we really don't know how good Duke is?
I think that's fair.
Absolutely fair to say about most teams at this point in the country after three games.
Yeah, particularly when you consider the level of competition most of them played. But Chris has done his homework on Quentin Harrison and his performance against the good teams versus.
Yeah, I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but. And his starts, in his two career starts against Power 5 opponents, he's completed fewer than 50% of his passes. Like, he went, I think, 12 of 22 against Alabama, but last year against Baylor, he was 12 of 30.
And so this is dating back to last year.
Yeah, when he replaced the injured Daniel Jones early in the season. He puts up huge numbers against FCS competition and Middle Tennessee, which I think ranks 114th in the country in total defense. I think he's really well coached, obviously, with David Cutcliffe.
He's a redshirt senior, right?
Yeah, he's a redshirt senior now. He's very experienced. But he's just – I think he's limited when it comes to the passing game. Duke's offense doesn't scare me. Now, the triple option that they're running some this year, that scares you. But it's good that Virginia Tech just played Furman, and they just saw some of those same elements in the Furman game. So they've really been preparing – for some of the same thing 2 weeks in a row, and that always helps. So it'd be like, if you'd played Navy the week before you played Georgia Tech, earlier in the season.
Yeah, everybody who had to play Georgia Tech on a regular basis was actually interested in scheduling Navy.
I was interested in scheduling
for
Navy.
For that reason. But back under Paul Johnson.
Exactly. So that helps. I don't fear Duke's talent level on offense. I don't think they'll go out and beat Virginia Tech man versus man. Obviously they're really well coached, so that concerns you. I worry about the option and the misdirection and stuff like that. But Tech, I thought, played a really mentally strong game against Furman. Yes, you expect Virginia Tech to physically dominate Furman, but what impressed me was they were much improved from a mental standpoint defensively in that game. So I think that bodes well going into this game, and I think the Tech defense will play well.
Yeah, I worry about Harris scrambling, and I don't know his rushing statistics right off the top of my head. He's probably got a couple hundred yards on the season.
He's our leading rusher.
Something like that's true. But I just went over how nobody's getting in behind the line of scrimmage. Alabama had one sack for 8 yards. I do remember that statistic. So without being able to go back and watch Duke game film, they're doing something right, you know?
Let's talk about Quentin Harris a little bit more in depth. His stats so far this year, he's pretty accurate, 66 of 91, 8 touchdowns, 2 picks. 2 picks were against Alabama. He's got only a long of 39 on the year, 679 passing yards. He's a redshirt senior. So is he more than a game manager for Duke? Is he the kind of guy who can put the game on his back and win it through the air?
I think everybody on offensively for Duke has to be on the exact same page, and they have to be operating at max efficiency for their offense to be successful. And I think David Cutcliffe has always been elite at getting the most out of his players, but does not have a lot of talent on this Duke team. There's just not a lot there. I think their top two running backs are solid, but I don't think you can really tell it because there's not much of a threat of a passing game with mediocre receivers and an offensive line that I think plays well together. They play smart, but they're not physically imposing at all. So it's just they're limited from a talent standpoint on offense. I think they get the most out of that talent, but you know I don't see them going on like a 14 play 85 yard drive in the fourth quarter to beat Virginia Tech. I don't think they're that type of offense.
Yeah.
And you look at the running game. So as we alluded to earlier, Quentin Harris is the leading rusher on the team with 203 yards. Their running back, who is a junior, Deion Jackson, 177 yards. So does this game come down to, Will, who runs the football better?
Darn, that's a good question. I think it comes down to turnovers, Evan.
Mm-hmm. Great answer. You can never go wrong with that.
Yeah, Virginia Tech, they don't run the ball particularly well. They don't score a lot of points either, but they find ways to manufacture some offense without their traditional running game. I don't know that we're going to sit there afterwards unless Duke lines up and does something unusual and runs for 300 yards. I don't think we're going to be talking about the rushing game after this game, answer your question.
Yeah, I agree. I think we'll be talking about turnovers and which group of receivers made plays and whether Tech made mental errors defensively. I think those will be the topics of conversation that will decide the
and
picture.
What happened in special teams.
Right. I think the running games or the lack thereof, I think it's a guy. I think both teams will be lacking in this game. I think they'll kind of cancel each other out.
So last thing before we get to predictions, Virginia Tech is 0-1 in the ACC, lost to Boston College to open up the season. How important is this game for Virginia Tech in terms of the ACC Coastal race?
Well, based on what I've seen so far, I don't have high hopes for Virginia Tech winning the Coastal. But if they lose this game, they're out.
Oh, they're out.
They're toast.
Done. 100% done. Be 0-2.
Yeah. And with
road games at Miami, Virginia. Not that Georgia Tech should be terribly difficult this year, but you know.
And a home game against Pitt, who has just looked so physical. You know, we'll talk about that matchup later on. I don't like that matchup at all.
So in a lot of ways, this game can determine the course of the season.
In terms of being competitive in the Coastal.
In terms of whether you would have a chance to win the Coastal, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, well, let's go ahead and let's dive into some predictions. You said it was interesting, and I'm curious to see what you guys come up with. I'll tee it up over to you. Give me a key and maybe a final score, Will.
So when you see our game preview, you will see that one of us picks Duke to win, and the other one of us picks Duke to lose. I pick Virginia Tech to win. I totally get the opposing viewpoint. I really don't like the matchup of Duke's experienced defensive line, grown man defensive line, against Virginia Tech's young offensive line. All kinds of rumors circulating about Ryan Willis's shoulder not being good. Just a lot of nothing you can verify. I get a bad vibe, so I get picking Duke to win. Now last year Duke was favored. I believe I looked it up. They were favored by 5. Chris and I both picked them to win. Wrong. Tech played a great game, and Duke didn't make plays. This time around, I looked up this morning, and betting sites always confuse me because I don't bet, but I believe the Hokies are favored by 3. For whatever that's worth, you know, it's a game in Lane Stadium this time instead of down in Durham. It wouldn't surprise me at all to see Duke win this thing, but I can't bring myself to pick it. I particularly can't bring myself to pick Duke to win 2 years in a row. So I'm going with Tech 27-20. don't know where the 27 is going to come from, but I don't pick tech to score over 30 anymore because it's not something they do very often. So, you know, 27-20, that's, the Hokies win, that's where I'm going.
And who are we going to be talking about Monday if Tech wins, in your opinion? One player.
Trey Turner. I'd love to be talking about Hezekiah Grimsley. I think he's such a phenomenal athlete, and but he's just not getting a lot of playing time. But it's going to be Trey. If it's Keshawn King, that'll be exciting. But my guess would be Trey. And on defense, depending upon what Bud – it just depends upon what Bud does.
Sure.
Yeah, it's hard to say.
I've got it 20-17 Duke. Virginia Tech, what's the line on the spreads? They've covered – how many times did Tech cover the spread last year?
I don't know about last year, but this year they haven't.
They haven't covered it at all. Yeah. So,
and not even close.
And not even close. All right, so if they don't cover the spread this time and still win, that means they either going to win by two or one.
Right.
So you're not giving yourself a lot of breathing room there.
Yeah.
I think Tech has a good chance to win the game. I think it's a 50-50 toss-up game,
I call
game,
it a
really.
Toss-up, yeah.
But I just – I don't – if I knew that Damon Hazleton and Zachariah Hoyt and Tywan Garbutt, those guys were going to play, I'd be much more inclined to pick Virginia Tech, but I don't know that. If I had seen Virginia Tech go a game this year without committing two or more turnovers, I would pick Tech, but I haven't seen it yet.
Solid points.
I'm gonna have to see it first. And I think Duke is one of those teams that they just play smart and they get the absolute most out of their talent. They put a lot of experienced players on the field, so it's easier to get the most out of your talent when you put so much experience on the field. Duke's got a good defense this year despite having two starting linebackers and never started before because one of them is – they're both fourth-year players. One of them's a true senior. The other's a redshirt junior. And that's what happens when you can keep players in your program and develop over the long term. Even if you don't necessarily have a returning starter there, your guy's still going to have experience being in the program and in the system and things like that. And that's how David Cutcliffe's been able to build that program. Tech needs to do the same thing, except a little bit higher level recruiting,
right.
Of course.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think if I thought if I knew for a fact that turnovers were going to be even or that Damon Hazleton was going to come back or anything like that, then I would pick Tech. But I haven't. I don't see the evidence of either one of those.
Yeah. So I would call his prediction more realistic and mine more optimistic. Is kind of how I'd categorize that.
I like it. We've got a Hokie and we've got a Blue Devil pick, and it should be a Friday night game in Lane. Just quickly, you know, I know Friday Night Lights is a big deal. I'm learning in Southwest Virginia, and you know what it will be like in y'all's opinion to have a game
so
in Lane
on Friday
night.
So we'll be
night.
Watching those students to see if they stay in that north end zone for the second half, since the sun's not going to be shining on them.
Sun's not going to be shining on them. There's some kind of event at halftime too. There's a parachute drop or something like that. One of those cool things. I saw it in the email text sent out yesterday.
I haven't gotten a chance to read through stuff. I spent yesterday in Charlotte buying Darth Vader's
truck. There's a third quarter phone light show in the third quarter.
So they're
trying to do things.
Not criticize Virginia Tech. They're trying.
They're trying to do things to keep people in the
what
stadium.
Do you want them to hand out $20 bills with 2 minutes left to go in the fourth quarter? I mean, you know.
And then Friday's also, I believe, it's the
– wait a minute. How much would that cost? 10,000 students, $20 each, you know, to get them to stay till there's 2 minutes left in the game.
Friday's also the
we'll let Brad Worthman work on that. Friday's also what?
Brad Worthman.
So it's a white effect, and
it's the 20th. It's the 20-year anniversary of the 1999 team.
Honoring the 1999 team. There's going to be some pretty cool videos run on that.
There's already a video up. I haven't had a chance to watch it yet, but there's a video up of the 99 team and the 99 season and stuff that Virginia Tech put out late last night.
So Evan, in planning for this podcast, Evan asked me, do you want to talk about it was either this podcast or the previous
the
podcast.
Monday.
Do you want to talk about the 99 team? And I'm like, no, that'll just make people mad. That was before we got to apply the transitive property to football against how Virginia played against ODU versus Virginia Tech against ODU. So white effect and honoring the 99 team.
It's going to be fun.
So wear your big jerseys if you get it. Well, you're not going to have a white one, though. I'll let you make the choice, folks.
Let's turn it over to Malcolm. Yes, he's related to Stuart, our fantastic producer here at Tech Sideline. Malcolm, how's everything going on Facebook?
Good, good. You want to talk about football? Do you want your one-hit wonder predictions?
Let's do football first. We'll get to one-hit wonder after that.
I can't wait to hear the one-hit wonder stuff.
Dale Kizer has a recruiting question. He's seen
James recruiting questions. No.
He's seen James and Lambert want to be a package deal. What are the Hokies' chances of getting both of them?
James and Lambert.
LaMarion James.
Did they go to the same high school?
We
have not been following recruiting. Now,
ever since the season started, I literally edit Jason Stame's articles, and that's it. I don't have time to even.
So, but LaMarion James decommitted.
They decommitted from UNC, and they are know each other, and they are friends. Fuente was at the Mari game over the weekend.
So you do
because
know
he does recruit people. You know?
He's a very engaging personality who works hard at recruiting.
Right. So, I think if they do go to the same school, it'll probably be Virginia Tech.
Hmm. I don't even know what position LaMarion James plays.
Cornerback.
Corner. So you got to
Virginia doesn't produce quarterbacks.
Yeah, well, you got that point.
The guy Northern Virginia that's coming in 2021.
And Lambert, the
757.
And Lambert's a pretty highly rated receiver.
Oh, he's our top player on the board.
Yeah.
He's Cam Chancellor's cousin. He's been considered a tech lean, although some say no. He's supposed to visit this week for Duke. So, yeah, I mean, Tech has a chance to land both of those guys. I would say at this point I would put them as probably the favorite for James. I think Lambert could probably go either way. But if he has a good visit this weekend, then they've got a very good shot.
I love that James decommitted from UNC. I just love it.
I know. And what you've got to do is – I know Mack Brown, the whole recruiting boost. But is it really a boost? I'm not sure that it is. It's a boost over, like, the last year of Larry Fedora, but that's it.
I don't know. If you look at the charts Ox produces for where the Coastal recruits are ranked, I think UNC looks pretty good.
Because they've had two decommits, like, in the last couple weeks.
Ox, we need a new chart.
Right.
He puts out some great stuff.
Yeah, he also, I think the guy from West Virginia, the defensive lineman, also.
Although a kid from Bluefield, Sean I can't remember Martin. His name, Sean Martin,
yeah,
I think.
He decommitted also, I think.
Where was he committed to?
Oh, UNC.
Oh, yeah, man, yeah. What's going on there? You losing your mojo there, man?
Lose to App State and then
lose two football games.
Oh, right.
What else over there, Malcolm? What we got?
Scott McCarty gave me one of the longest questions I've ever seen. But I'll cut it down to, what's Virginia Tech's offensive strength and identity now, and what moves by coaches make the most sense given offensive personnel and performance?
So they don't have an offensive strength or identity. I guess you could say it's wide receivers.
Yeah.
But with Hazleton out, still two of your three receivers are starting receivers are freshmen.
Yeah.
So is that a strength, or is it just, or is that just the the less weak?
I like the passing game in general. I don't love it, but
I think it's limited because Willis is not good at the short to intermediate stuff.
Yeah.
I just don't think he sees the field well in situations where they need short to intermediate stuff.
And
he's very good at throwing the football down the field. Very good at those crossing patterns.
Yeah.
But he's not going to have time to throw those all year.
Yeah.
Because the offensive line isn't that great.
So the second half of the question is, what do you do with personnel? There just aren't options.
There just really aren't that many options. I've made the suggestion to move Tyrell Smith to center, maybe tried Janzy at right guard and things like that.
Yeah.
Maybe they would help a little bit. I don't know. I don't know how
there's only so many pieces.
Yeah,
to move
I just I don't
board.
Think Willis is a complete quarterback.
Right.
But he's definitely the best. If the wide receivers are the strength, he's the best quarterback.
He's the guy to leverage that strength.
He's the guy to leverage that strength because I don't think Hinton and Hooker could leverage it.
Yeah.
All right.
Let's
have some fun here too. Let's close out the podcast. I said at the beginning today is National One Hit Wonder Day, and we talk a lot about music on the podcast, so I thought this would be fun. Before we get to the questions, first of all, this is a Rolling Stones article that came out in 2011. I'm going to go with that. I've got the top eight in front of me.
Okay.
Would you guys like to take a couple of guesses before we turn it over to Malcolm?
I'm not up to date on music history.
So, this is so looking at
all over decade.
Looking at that top eight, give me time frames.
A good amount of 80s, maybe a little bit of 90s in here.
A little bit of 90s. No 70s?
If it is 70s, I don't know.
Okay.
The But the first two, you could get, Chris. There's
no, I'm sure if you said it, and I'd be like, oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah,
but
see, I'm not good at thinking of stuff.
Let's turn over the board. You think about it, Will. Let's turn it over to Facebook.
You go ahead,
Malcolm,
and read some of them there off of Facebook.
Take some guesses.
Okay, so we've got You Can't Touch This, MC Hammer.
Hmm. Yeah, he had a couple other songs.
That is not in the top eight, but it's not
Hammer's
not
actually a one-hit wonder.
Hmm. Yeah. Ice Baby.
They are a one-hit wonder, but in this article, they are not in the top eight. That's a good guess.
Mickey
by Tony Basil. Yeah. What about Tainted Love by Soft Cell?
Tainted Love by Soft Cell is number five.
All right. Is She Blinded Me with Science? Is that on there?
Not in the top eight.
Okay. I'm starting to run out of... Anybody, anything
Eye
else?
Eye of the Tiger?
Survivor? No.
They had more than one hit. Yeah. They had Eye of the Tiger, and then I don't remember.
Those are some good guesses. I'll go ahead and go...
So go down the list. And, what, Malcolm?
I've never heard of Dexy's Midnight Runners.
Ah, oh, Come On, Eileen.
Come On, Eileen is number two on the list.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, okay. Come On, Eileen.
See, I hate that song.
No. They played Elaine all the time.
I don't get
love
the fuss
song.
Over it. I really don't. So, oh, my gosh. So go down the list and give me hints. So we don't want to spend a ton of time
sure,
on it.
Sure. I'll be honest. I can only really give you one hint, and I would give away the number one. There's one country song, and it has country in the artist name the song lyric.
Is it Achy Breaky Heart? Mm-mm. It has country in
The country is in the artist name and in the lyric of the song. That's the one hit wonder. That's about the...
Wow. I have no idea.
I'll go 8-1 again. I don't know how accurate this is. This is what they were using on ESPN one. So, number eight is Tub Thumping by...
Chumbawamba.
Yep.
Never heard of it.
Number seven
is... I get knocked down, and I get up again.
Oh, okay. All right. Number seven is Blind Melon, No Rain.
I don't know it by name.
Number six, everyone should know this one. The Knack, My Sharona.
Yeah.
My Sharona.
I don't know that's a one-hit wonder. But anyway, that was a monster hit. Great song.
Number five, Soft Cell, Tainted Love, as we said. Number four, Big Country in a Big Country.
No, come on. When you said it was in the band name and in the song title, I thought, well, Big Country, Dream by Big Country. No. Okay, I love the song, don't get me wrong, but I'm not sure I'd name it one of the top five one-hit wonders of all time.
Number three is Norman Greenbaum, Spirit in the Sky.
Okay, that's interesting. What, Malcolm?
Is Rick Astley on there?
Never Gonna Give
Never
You
gonna
Up.
Gonna
it's
give
not
you.
That's a great song. Number two is Dexy, Midnight's Runners, Come On, Eileen. And the number one, I think this was pretty... Well, I listen to a lot of 80s. Number one is Aha, Take On Me. I think that's a fairly reasonable
one. That's tough because you say that, and I immediately think The Sun Always Shines on TV was a decent hit for them. So you start getting these arguments about how do you categorize a one-hit wonder. And there are true one-hit wonders. And then some of them you're like, they did have one or two other songs that I remember, you know, so...
So anyway, I thought that was fun.
Go Marcy Playground, Sex and Candy.
That was okay. I was reading a different article earlier. That was on a different one. I just went with the Rolling Stones.
How about I'm Too Sexy by Right Said Fred? That is a true one-hit wonder.
Okay.
I'm too sexy for my podcast.
But Ice Ice Baby was a good one. I'm surprised that was not.
That's
on there,
excellent.
That was so. Yeah. All right. Well, listen, that's going to wrap it up. Just under an hour today on the podcast. Virginia Tech and Duke on Friday. Be sure to drink some Stickin' In Ale if you're of age. Support Tech Sideline, and we'll be back on Monday recapping Tech and Duke.
Recapping Tech's victory over Duke.
It's going to be 27-20. We'll be talking about Trey Turner, and we'll have all of his boxes checked, and we'll have a new. Lyric in the bio, hopefully on Monday as well.
I will try to get to that. Yes, yeah. It's been a whirlwind 8 days. So
well,
hopefully things will slow down.
Glad you got your truck, CC. Enjoy your tailgating, and we'll talk Monday.
All right,
that's going to do it for this episode of the Tech Sideline Podcast for our fantastic producer Malcolm. Yes, he's related to Stewart behind the scenes on the podcast center. Managing editor Chris Coleman, our founder and head honcho Will Stewart. I'm Evan Hughes, proud host of the Tech Sideline Podcast. Saying so long, enjoy National One Hit Wonder Day, and we'll talk to you next time right here on the Tech Sideline Podcast presented by the Fisher Law Firm.